I loved collecting the mail from my front box. Every day for 6 weeks, I received 5 to 15 cards from people who were cheering me on. Although I could not read what they wrote, I would sit on Gigi's mattress and look at the pictures, touch the cards, and literally feel the love radiating from every message. Gigi would read the cards to me every afternoon. We hung them up all over the apartment, so I was surrounded by all this love, on the doors, on the walls, in the bathroom, everywhere. It was really wonderful to receive these cards with the fundamental message being something like, "Dr. Jill, you don't know who I am, but I met you when you keynoted in Phoenix. Please come back to us. We love you, and your work is so important to us." Every day I received this touching reinforcement of who I had been before the stroke. There's no question in my mind that it was the power of this unconditional support and love that gave me the courage to face the challenges of recovery. I will always be grateful for my friends and NAMI family who reached out to me and believed in me. Learning to read again was by far the hardest thing I had to do. I don't know if those cells in my brain had died or what, but I had no recollection that reading was something I had ever done before, and I thought the concept was ridiculous. Reading was such an abstract idea that I couldn't believe anyone had ever thought of it, much less put forth the effort to figure out how to do it. Although Gigi was a kind taskmaster, she was insistent about my learning and placed a book titled The Puppy Who Wanted a Boy in my hands. Together, we embarked upon the most arduous task I could imagine, teaching me to make sense of the written word. It befuddled me how she could think these squiggles were significant. I remember her showing me an S and saying, "This is an S." And I would say, "No, Mama, that's a squiggle." And she would say, "This squiggle is an S, and it sounds like S." I thought the woman had lost her mind. A squiggle was just a squiggle, and it made no sound. My brain remained in pain over the task of learning to read for quite some time. I had a real problem concentrating on something that complicated. Thinking literally was hard enough for my brain at this early stage, but jumping to something abstract was beyond me. Learning to read took a long time and a lot of coaxing. First, I had to understand that every squiggle had a name and that every squiggle had an associated sound. Then, combinations of squiggles, or letters, fit together to represent special combinations of sounds, sh, th, squa, etc. When we string all of those combinations of sounds together, they make a single sound, word, that has a meaning attached to it. Jeez! Although I struggled and struggled with learning how to read again, my brain showed obvious progress each day. We celebrated when I could finally read the sounds, words, out loud, even though I displayed no comprehension. As the days went by, my recall about the overall content of the story improved, and Gigi and I were both motivated to keep plodding along. The next step, of course, was to associate a meaning to the sound. This was particularly difficult since I was already having a hard time recalling my verbal vocabulary. The blood clot was pushing against the fibers running between my two language centers, so neither of them was working properly. Broca's area in the front of my brain was having problems creating sounds, while Wernicke's in the back of my brain was confusing my nouns. There seemed to be a serious gap in my information processing, and often I could not articulate what I was thinking. Although I would think that I wanted a glass of water and picture a glass of water in my mind, the word milk would still come out of my mouth. Although it was helpful for people to correct me, it was vitally important that no one either finish my sentences or constantly prompt me. If I were to ever regain these abilities, then I needed to find that circuitry within my mind, in my own time, and exercise it.